Welcome to this week's episode of the Agribiz Show. I'm your host, Rusty Halverson, on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO with a recap of this week's best headlines in farm and ranch news. The first ship carrying Ukrainian grain setting out from the port of Odessa on Monday. The departure of the ship, laden with corn, follows an internationally brokered deal that's expected to finally allow large stores of Ukrainian crops to reach foreign markets and ease a growing crisis. The ship headed out for Lebanon. Russia and Ukraine signing separate agreements with Turkey and the United Nations, clearing the way for Ukraine to export around 22 million tons of grain and other goods that have been stuck in Black Sea ports because of Russia's invasion. The African continent is not the largest customer for U.S. red meat, but it holds big potential for growth. U.S. Meat Export Federation representative for Africa, Matt Copeland, explains how USMEF, with support from USDA and the Beef Checkoff Program, laying the groundwork for future growth in that region.
There is a huge volume of consumers. Nigeria is over 200 million people. By 2100, that's the largest country in the world by population potentially, and China going the other way in terms of their demographic cuts. It's such an important base for us to be looking into. We're a short market for these variety meats. There's still a long way to go in terms of satisfying demand. I'd say we're probably 1,000 tons a month short, and we can accept more offers, and we're glad and willing to try and get more offers into that sub-Saharan African sector of the market. Certainly critical, kidneys, and then there's other products, reclaimed beef head meat, beef tongue roots, as an example, used in manufacturing of hamburger patties in-country. It's a wonderful way of starting to introduce consumers to a slightly different flavor.
Copeland notes that a return to more normal shipping rates would open up more variety meat sales in Africa. At the same time, there is significant growth in more traditional grocery chains offering higher-end cuts.
European outlets like Carrefour or ShopRite, which is pioneered from South Africa as a retail organization, they have over 2,500 commercially owned central head office controlled stores and another 500 approximately franchise stores. Companies like Massmart in South Africa, Walmart has a significant equity position in those businesses.
Again, that is Matt Copeland of the U.S. Meat Export Federation talking about the potential of Africa's market for U.S. red meat. The Great Lakes Seaway Partnership recently reported monthly tonnage for shipping through the St. Lawrence Seaway for June, with numbers indicating continued reliability and productivity on the system. Craig Middlebrook is the Deputy Administrator for the Great Lakes St. Lawrence Seaway Development Corporation.
Our reliability, our dependability of the overall system is at all-time highs, and I think that that resonates particularly with logistics people. The our system availability rate, as we call it, for the U.S. locks and channels is running at 99.7%. Over the last 2.5 years during the pandemic, I'm happy to report that the Great Lakes Seaway system has not experienced the types of delays and disruptions with our traditional supply chains as some of the coastal port ranges have experienced. We are, the Great Lakes Seaway system is primarily a bulk commodity system, but certain types of non-bulk cargoes, a burgeoning container area, for example, what we call project cargo, which is wind towers and related products, have been growing over the last number of years. So just generally, our overall story of reliability and dependability is being recognized, and I think different markets are looking to tap into that, particularly those that may ship certain types of cargoes that would go through other port ranges. They're looking for some alternatives to send that through the Great Lakes.
Middlebrook says many international vessels are looking to ports on the Great Lakes for grain shipments, partially due to the war in Ukraine.
I think that interest is there probably on the wheat side, but the availability of that in our system right now is just not there. That could change as the season goes forward, and that's where we remain cautiously optimistic that the overall tonnage numbers will continue to increase month to month compared to the first part of the season. Where's that interest coming from? I think clearly geopolitical issues are having an effect on that. The availability of certain types of agricultural products on the world market are under fierce demand right now, and people are looking to the North American market to hopefully fill in some of that supply that is probably being affected by what's going on in Europe right now.
The Minnesota Farm Fest hosted a forum titled Must-Haves in the Next Farm Bill. Scott Vanderwall, Vice President of the American Farm Bureau Federation, said his group is encouraging lawmakers to keep nutrition in the overall farm bill.
And if the non-state House members see that, if it gets passed, and they see that, they might say, well, we've put this $80 billion into conservation. Maybe we don't need the commodity title of the farm bill, and we'll just worry about nutrition. So that's one big concern. We really want to keep that together. We also have serious concerns about tax increases. This is not the time to do that.
Rob LaRue, Vice President of the National Farmers Union, said a bipartisan spirit is needed on Capitol Hill for the farm bill debate.
I think if we can come around on this, as we go into the next farm bill, there's going to be even more recognition that whether it's conservation funding or other priorities that we're going to need to address in the farm bill, it's going to take not just urban and rural constituencies out there, but also Republicans and Democrats. And I think that this holds that potential to being, you know, another message that some of these issues shouldn't be partisan.
Meanwhile, the American Farm Bureau is hosting a federal milk marketing order forum on October 14th through the 16th in Kansas City. Danny Munch, an economist with the Farm Bureau, says that forum will focus on industry perspectives on dairy pricing.
The Federal Milk Marketing Order Forum is being planned as a response to Secretary Vilsack's request to get the dairy industry in one room and discuss meaningful changes to federal dairy policy. The conference will consist of four half-day segments. Each segment will start with a panel that includes industry leaders and farmers who will discuss specific dairy policy, such as Class 1 pricing issues. And that panel will be followed by a corresponding roundtable session where our attendees engage with each other directly to share ideas and thoughts on the issues discussed during the panel.
Munch says anyone involved in the industry should consider attending the forum at the downtown Marriott in Kansas City.
The forum is open to all dairy industry participants, whether they are a processor, exporter, or farmer. Our members are trying to create an environment of collaboration and understanding so all segments of the dairy supply chain are heard, with a special focus on helping make the farmer's voice heard.
And he says now is a critical time to talk about milk marketing reforms.
Federal dairy policy has a strong impact on the milk check farmers use to support their families and businesses. The more farmers we can get to attend, the more perspectives will be considered, especially with an upcoming farm bill next year and as the market inches closer to a federal order hearing.
According to numbers tracked by DTN for fertilizer retailers for the fourth week of July, prices continued to drift lower, but anhydrous was still costing more than $1,400 per ton. Urea had an average price of $836 a ton. It's been a problem around the nation for several months, but we're starting to see some relief for gasoline prices. President Biden's special envoy and coordinator for international energy affairs, Amos Hochstein, expects to see that trend continue.
Since that day 6 weeks ago where gasoline prices were over $5, today most Americans are seeing gasoline prices of below $4. And in fact, on a few, we're already starting to see some signs of some gas stations even below $3. So we've seen one of the fastest declines in gasoline prices on record. And at the same time, oil prices were $120 just 6 weeks ago. And today, as we talk today, oil prices are at just about $90. So that is almost a $30 decline in prices since the middle of June. And that's, again, we think that is the right direction, but it's not enough. We would like to see prices go down even further.
So, what needs to happen for that continuing decline?
Well, your listeners will know that a week ago, the oil companies had reported their profits for the second quarter of this year, and they were record profits. And it's no doubt they have record profits when oil prices go to 120 and gasoline prices go to $5 a gallon. You know that they're going to have record profits. We're not against profits, but we do think and expect that oil companies that make those kind of profits should reinvest them back in America, that they should reinvest them by increasing their production of oil and gas and increasing their investment in refineries and making sure that refineries that went offline during COVID come back and increase and stay open for the short and medium term so that we can bring those prices down.
But the question comes up, can we expect that oil companies will make those reinvestments? Hochstein thinks it is possible.
I think that we can expect that, and I think that we're actually seeing it. We have told the company, the president told the companies, look, you're making a lot of money, record profits. We're not asking you not to make money. You should. We're capitalists. That's what the United States is. But you can make more investments, as you usually have done in the past, into this extra production. You'll still make money.
That is Amos Hochstein, involved with energy affairs at the White House. We'll have more on this week's episode of the Agribiz Show coming up in just a moment on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO. Welcome back to the Agribiz Show on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO. I'm your host, Rusty Halverson. Farm state senators have joined House colleagues in trying to crack down on foreign ownership of U.S. farmland. Back in June, House appropriators included a ban on Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran owning U.S. farmland in their annual USDA spending bill. Current federal law imposes no restrictions on foreign farmland ownership here, requiring reporting only. Now, Senators Tammy Baldwin, a Wisconsin Democrat, and Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley have introduced the Farmland Security Act to modernize a law that was first passed back in 1979.
The bill also requires the Department of Agriculture to report to Congress on the impact that these foreign investments have on family farms, rural communities, and protecting our national food supply.
And then there's the Food Security is National Security Bill.
That bill requires the USDA to have a seat on the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, called CFIUS for short.
USDA reports that China, Russia, and Iran accounted for a combined 200,000 acres of foreign-owned ag land in the U.S. in 2019. China, most of it largely by owning Smithfield Foods, but allies Canada, the Netherlands, Italy, and Germany holding the lion's share of foreign-owned U.S. agricultural land at just over 35 million acres in 2019, or just under 3% of such privately held land. While the Missouri River Basin runoff improved over the past couple of months, it's still not enough to overcome the long-term drought persisting in much of the basin. July runoff in the Missouri River Basin above Sioux City, Iowa, was 3.2 million acre feet, which is 98% of the average, and 0.7 million acre feet more than was forecast last month. As expected, according to John Remus, the chief of the Army Corps of Engineers with the Missouri River Basin Water Management Division, reservoir inflows in July have been declining due to warmer and drier conditions in the upper Missouri River Basin. New York's Attorney General says that Tyson Foods is refusing to comply with a subpoena for a civil probe into possible price gouging during COVID-19. Letitia James asking a state judge in Manhattan to make Tyson turn over materials like contractual terms, prices, and profit margins for its meat sales to New York retailers between December 2019 and April of 2022. Dairy department sales climbed by double digits in supermarkets across the country recently. Supermarket News says that dairy category sales totaling just under $5.1 billion for the month, 16% higher year over year. The International Dairy Deli Bakery Association said in its June marketplace report that unit sales did drop by 2.4% from last year. The IDDBA report says the consistency of the weekly sales levels at least $1.2 billion, still encouraging because it means demand is holding strong, especially compared to pre-COVID-19 levels. The biggest sales taking place in the week leading up to Father's Day, with total sales of $1.3 billion. Milk was easily the biggest seller in that June report. The next biggest sellers were natural cheese and eggs. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Agribiz Show on the Mighty 790 and 104.7 KFGO.